You remember learning about the water cycle in elementary school? The rain falls, the plants grow, moisture evaporates and forms clouds, and the rain falls again. That's a simple process to understand. Nature has many more processes we're just getting around to understanding. And the new knowledge comes at a time when much is changing around us, along with the climate. That's what we'll talk about in this month's edition of Curious, Research Meets Radio, our regular check-in on research at the University of Oregon. This month, we meet Lucas Silva, Assistant Professor of Environmental Studies at the University of Oregon, and the principal investigator of the Soil Plant Atmosphere Lab, or SPA Lab. Lucas Silva, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning.
So tell us first what the SPA Lab is all about.
Yeah, so this cute acronym stands for Soil Plant Atmosphere Interactions, and the importance in controlling water cycles and biogeochemical cycles that are important for sustainability. So, for example, we've learned that climate change is impacting terrestrial ecosystems across the world. And to predict that, you can't just look at plants alone. You've got to look at their interactions with soil, soil organisms, soil nutrients, to try and project and expand our knowledge and predictive ability of how ecosystems are changing in response to climate change.
Did we get a chance to understand these systems very well before climate change took hold? In other words, do we have a baseline?
Yes, we do. In many cases, we do. People have been curious about their natural environment for a long time. We have been gathering data in all sorts of forms since the beginning, since the dawn of civilization. You could probably say that safely. But climate change has brought a new scope to the knowledge we have gathered to date. Now we have this common problem that manifests itself in many different ways across the various ecosystems that we have studied over time. So the way I see this, this big challenge gives us a north. Now everybody's pulling together the data we have for collected for centuries and trying to make projections and predictions and verify those predictions as we move forward towards finding solutions for the climate problem.
Can you give us an example of a natural process that appears to have changed or changed in intensity or changed in some way because of climate change?
Sure. We've always known that soils help plants grow, right? So any good gardener would know that a soil-rich in organic carbon would be good to grow some food crops, for example. Climate change has accelerated the pace at which decomposition happens in soils, and that is both for agricultural soils as well as forest soils, such that we have that change in the carbon cycle that is tied up directly with nutrient cycling in both natural ecosystems and managed ecosystems. What that means for climate adaptation is that under certain conditions where soils are being lost, in particular, the organic matter of the soil is being lost at an accelerated pace due to either increasing temperature and microbial respiration or increasing rainfall or variation in seasonality and losses through erosion. In those places, you may have a more serious challenge in terms of keeping an ecosystem resilient. And by that, I mean resilient to climate variability as we know it's happening.
So it sounds like, for example, if you're in a managed ecosystem, you know, if you're farming, for example, things that you used to do that would produce sustainability may not get you there. You might have to put in greater inputs or just change something about the processes.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it's one of the biggest challenges that the problem of climate change manifests itself in various different ways, depending on where you are in the world. And even within a single region, you may have different management strategies that may be better suited for adapting to climate change. One example of that is in forestry. We often thin forests to save water, right? In doing so, in some cases, we suppress understory vegetation, which can be beneficial for things like nitrogen fixation and the nutrient cycling within that forest. So we are now beginning to put those stories together, looking at not only the water and the carbon cycle, but at what the nutrient cycle does to interact with those two other cycles in order to create more robust management programs or conservation programs. In some cases, we are learning that the best use of certain land might be to actually preserve them and conserve them as opposed to manage them. And that is a shift in perspective that has been coming along for a long way now.
Lucas Silva, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange in this month's edition of Curious Research Meets Radio, our regular check-in on research at the University of Oregon. That is where Lucas is an assistant professor of environmental studies and the principal investigator of the Soil Plant Atmosphere Lab, largely focused, as you can hear, on effects of processes changing under climate change. You can join us. Your phone calls and emails are welcome at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So I noticed that some of your work involves in looking for information about biological processes of the past, and it's not like ancient humans kept good records. So what kinds of things do you do to look for evidence of how processes worked in the past?
Sure. My career started really looking at paleo landscapes and paleo ecosystems, and specifically within the past 12,000 years or so, what has happened to the distribution of forest and savanna ecosystems. That those were the first kinds of studies I had the opportunity to do. And in those cases, what this entails is looking at, for example, soil organic matter as a record of past landscape change. So the soils remember, right? Soils have they have a way of recording their environment, both in terms of the organic compounds that end up in the soil, as well as the types of minerals that interact with those organic compounds. So one of the things we do in my lab is take a sample, for example, from deep soil layer somewhere in the tropics and look at the isotopic composition of that organic carbon that is attached to a particular clay layer. And by doing so and having a knowledge of baseline change and the way the ecosystems have shifted over time, we can determine whether or not forests have been expanding or you know, collapsing under previous climate change or climate variability before our species became a dominant planetary force.
When you talk about baseline change, I wonder if you're seeing processes that seem to be accelerating with climate change, that the changes in the processes themselves are happening faster than they did historically.
Yeah, we have, we've all seen recent reports of increasing extinctions of both animal and plant species, right? So that's one example of accelerated rates of change. In my own research, we see pretty large and significant changes in baseline tree growth, for example, from tree rings. We do a lot of tree ring studies from, really the tropics to the Arctic, trying to understand how different conditions will be better suited for growing trees, and whether or not forests will either expand or collapse under climate change. So in all those cases, we see accelerated rates of change. But unlike most people think, we don't always see, increasing tree growth under warming conditions, even when you have climate-limited system or a cold environment, right? In many cases, for example, when you look at alpine tree line data in response to climate, we see an accelerated rate of tree growth. In some cases, in other cases, we see an accelerated rate of tree decline and mortality. And you see that across the Pacific Northwest. We see that up in the Arctic or in the northern Canadian border forest, as well as in Mexican mountain forests, where we have been working now for a decade or so.
And I was looking at your research in Tibet, and it sounds like what you're seeing there is that the forests are apparently growing faster now?
Exactly. So that's a unique site, one of the only ones where we found what we expected to find, which was a generalized acceleration of tree growth that also meant an expansion of forested land encroaching over historically meadow systems. And what's happening there, we think, is that in combination with the effect of rising CO2 levels and stimulating tree growth, and a warmer climate also stimulating tree growth, we have this unique situation where you have previously frozen soils or permafrost soils thawing at the same time as we have this changes in atmospheric composition and climate. So what that does is that not only plants are being stimulated by a better climate, but also they have enough resources from the soil, namely water and nutrients, that will provide and sustain that growth increase for a long period of time. Now, that's a unique case because in most cases we see a situation where an early increase in tree growth and early release in tree growth that may or may not match a forest expansion towards higher altitudes, for example, that eventually gets limited by other factors such as soil nitrogen availability, water content overall, instead of just matching a tracking climate, tracking temperature as we would expect the trees to do. In many cases, the soil resources is what limits their response to climate. And that's the main reason why we need to study soil, plants, and atmosphere in an integrated fashion as opposed to the disjoint, pocketed, each environment in its own box as we used to do before.
So when you hear people say that, it's okay that we're having the earth warm up because it means that plants will grow faster. You're saying that in some cases you may have plants grow faster because the climate itself is more favorable, but they end up hitting other limits and what can stop their growth.
Absolutely, yeah. So we will see some positive change, and positive and negative in this case could be whatever we value as positive or negative, right? So forest expansion may be seen as a positive thing as a negative thing, depending who you ask, and depending on the environment we're talking about. But the big challenge here is that we have a problem in ecology, a longstanding challenge, which is the challenge of predicting changes across different scales. And we don't really know, or we have limited ability to predict how things will change, and they likely will change in different ways depending on where you look. And that dependency, relativity is what makes it complicated to embrace climate change as a positive thing. Oh, trees will grow more, forests will be more productive. That's not necessarily true. That will be true in some cases, but overall, we have a less certainty about the way we manage things, less certainty about the way ecosystems will be able to absorb and respond to the changes we're seeing at the global scale.
Dr. Lucas Silva is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange in this month's edition of Research, or Curious, Research Meets Radio from the University of Oregon, where he's an assistant professor of environmental studies and the principal investigator of the Soil Plant Atmosphere Lab. Questions, comments from you about processes in the environment changing with the climate? 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Talking about forests for a few minutes here, but you do talk about, you work with prairies and pastures as well. What's going on there?
Yeah, we have a series of new experiments going on across the Northwest trying to test some of the ideas we've learned from forests, actually. So we've known for a while now that forests and soil fungi can build this complex networks where resources are shared back and forth between, the different plant species. And we've known that from studies in British Columbia as well, as here in Northern California and Southern Oregon. Now we are trying to test and see if that there is really a network of connectivity there that should be relevant, that could be relevant also in rangeland type ecosystems. So we're looking at doing experiments where we impose projected climate change that should expect it for the future. So, most global models now predict an average of annual temperature increase of plus 3 degrees Celsius by 2080 across our region, with wetter winters and drier summers, right? So we are manipulating climate at the local scale and watching both pastures dominated by single species as well as diverse prairies, and see how this interaction between plants and their fungal symbionts and their ability to share resources back and forth between species, and how does that change under climate pressure.
And I understand you have some work at the Siskiyou Field Institute in the Illinois Valley involved in this?
Yes, we do. As we speak, I have a crew of scientists and students moving down there right now to do one of our very last stable isotope labeling experiments for the season. And essentially what they do and what we do is we feed certain plants with a labeled CO2 molecule, for example, and then we track that as it moves from the plant down to the roots, into the fungal community, and then back up again into the plant where they might be connected via this common mycorrhizal networks below ground, sharing or not resources. And it's pretty fascinating to see how fast plants can share resources through this connections. And, you know, in a few days, you can see a single individual plant being labeled in the field, spread its carbon through this connections to their, you know, symbionts as well as other plants. So maybe tapping resources from the same mycorrhizal network. It's a pretty exciting project, and we are just beginning to wrap up our data for the season, and paper should be coming out as soon as we can understand what's going on there.
So this is really detailed work. You did say labeled CO2 molecules. How do you label a CO2 molecule?
Exactly. We actually purchase them labeled, so they come very pure and cylinders. So it's just they behave like any other CO2 molecule would. You know, we have different stable isotopes of carbon naturally occurring in the atmosphere. Carbon-12 and carbon-13, those are stable. They remain stable even after they're being processed by the photosynthetic apparatus, for example. So if you, by feeding a plant or by exposing a plant to an atmosphere where we have that stable isotope labeled CO2 molecule, then tracking down the other carbon pools within which that plant is interacting, for example, the fungal symbiont to the roots, we can be certain that our molecules are now, and our labeled atoms of carbon are moving from plants to fungal communities. Not only can know when it happens, but we can quantify how much of that transfer occurs, because we know the baseline isotopic ratio in the environment, and now we know the how much you're enriching a certain plant biomass by, and this way we can learn where things move once plants take the bump.
Wow, that is amazing. This will have to be our final question. We're almost out of time, but you were talking about how the soil talks, and I wonder if through your explorations you can figure out that where there's an oak savanna now, there used to be a conifer forest or something like that.
Yeah, so in fact, the Pacific Northwest is one of the best studied paleo environments in the world. We have, in this region, most of the work has been done with pollen records as opposed to soil records. So pollenological records are the you know, the way pollen accrues and accumulates in lakes and sediments would be the best way to learn about that. I think we have a pretty good grasp about the biogeography of the systems. But my work is mostly focused on soils in the tropics, where we can actually learn from the organic matter whether or not it comes from prey or trees and forests.
Wow, it's very detailed work and yielding some really interesting some revelations as well. We're talking about the work of the Soil Plant Atmosphere Lab at the University of Oregon, where Lucas Silva is the principal investigator. He's an assistant professor of environmental studies at the University of Oregon, and he's been our guest in this month's edition of Curious Research Meets Radio, our joint venture with the U of O. Dr. Silva, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.